This is It Ends with a Dance, written by Croic and read by Tipsy Kitty. It ends with a dance, because it always does. By the time he registers that the music has begun, it is already too late. His heart has taken its rhythm. The twinned thump of aching ventricles guide him and his company into the stilted steps of a kind of waltz, partners turning to face each other, falling into their choreography with involuntary alacrity. Casilda takes his hand in hers. Her skin is clammy against his. Her eyes gape wide and glossy. He can see the scream caught in her throat as it bulges and flutters, as if her horror is a living thing struggling against the smothering kiss of a serpent. Still, she surrenders into him, and as is demanded of him, he takes the lead. The organ hollers. It is as much a full orchestra now as it is keys and pipes, encircling the chamber with its menagerie of grotesque forms. Deep beneath the palace, its lungs heave, pumping out its cacophony of voices through a thousand mouths of brass and wood. The sinews stretching between each portion of the monstrous form vibrate in droning accompaniment to the insectoid scraping of unholy strings. It is pandemonium-made music. It sets the air alight with kaleidoscope fire that scathes even the eyes. What hope do the ears have? The stranger, because that is what he is here, still, even after however many uncountable eons have passed, whisks his partner in increasingly manic flourishes across the shattered marble floor of Carcosa's temple ballroom. The other actors spin and whirl, joints straining and cracking with each snap of their master's wrist against their strings. Their bodies are little more than smears of glittering satin and greasy flesh to the stranger in their midst. Their faces are smooth and pale, their features blurred by the movement, skin rippling like silk in the wind. Their masks, long shed, crack and clatter beneath the stomping of frenzied, forced merriment. It has always been this, the mad symphony, and the automatons, trapped in chaotic symbiosis, as if each of them were equally perpetrator and victim of this farcical purgatory. Occasionally, the stranger has enough of his own mind to be grateful that if nothing else, at least he no longer requires the use of his cane. The dance picks up its pace. The chamber pulses and flexes, and the dancers flow hither and thither, helpless against its acceleration. In the typhoon of moving bodies, the hems of elegant gowns lash like whips, drawing blood from thighs and shins. Silver buckles on handsome boots tear chunks of meat out of ankles. The air thickens with perspiration and panicked breath, as the music demands grace that demands agony to be upheld. Casilda's scream distends her throat, and the stranger stares in locked fascination at her skin, ripe to split across the cords, waiting for her voice to bellow out in bloody glory and join the organ's abominable choir. She is cast down and quickly lost beneath the dance. The stranger feels what may be the delicate bones of her wrist snap beneath the heel of his boot, but he cannot stop, because tattered gold has already taken her place. The sweltering robes of the king draw him in. Long bony fingers twine in his, and a firm tyrannical palm presses into the small of his back. The stranger sways into his lord unbidden, allowing him without hesitation or struggle to take the lead. "Well, my dear protagonist?" the king in yellow asks, as he always does. His face beneath his mantle shifts, features twisting in mobile impossibility as he draws the stranger closer, closer, until their bodies hold no outlines. "How does your play end?" The king looms over him, and the stranger's spine curls back on itself to accommodate. His head falls and the court twirls like gnashing carousel horses across his vision, indistinct and wailing and lovely. He alone remains at the center with his king. It is a loathsome ecstasy that he clings to as fervently as his pulse clings to the beat of the orchestra. "It doesn't end," he breathes, and the king, pleased, bends to meet his mouth. With fingers twined, bodies twined, their lips follow suit in crushing, consuming intimacy. The stranger's soul and sanity forfeit, cast into the unfathomable configuration of a god's merciless kiss. When his throat bulges around a scream, his king sucks it from his lungs, swallows it down, saves him from it. He is not like Casilda. He has no need for horror. He is exactly where he belongs, and he allows the curtain of the king's living cloak to smother him whole. All around them, the clamor of broken feet against jagged stone jostles together in a sound like applause. Encore! Encore! Cry the wretches, and they shall have their due. The end.